You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Does this country remind you of the America that you grew up in? Do your children enjoy the same freedoms that you did when you were young?
Do you think that you can take me on? You must be crazy. There ain't a single thing you've done that's gonna faze me.
Just how far are you willing to be pushed? When are we gonna put our collective foot down and tell the tyrant, get off of my back? Hi, I'm Cope Reynolds, and if you're tired of the same old sugar-coated mush-mouth monologue of talk radio, join me for The Shooting Bench, Monday through Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Central. Guns, self-defense, survival, current events are just a few of the topics that we'll discuss on The Shooting Bench, and we're going to start discussing them right now.
Have you forgotten? One dying and a burying. One dying and a burying. Some crying, six carrying me. I want to be free. Oh, I want to be free.
Robert Lavoie Finicum is a free man. Right now, he is experiencing the life that he hoped for all of us, and he's as free as they get. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It's the 8th of February, and it's a Monday. We've had a long weekend. I'm sorry about last week. There are some things that I can tell you tonight. I couldn't tell you at the time what was going on. So we've got a lot to talk about tonight. Yeah, that was Roger Miller, their radio document. Let's see. Okay, that's trying to catch up on the chat room here. Anyway, what we did this weekend, we were at Lavoie Finicum's funeral, and actually I was in charge of all the security there for the funeral, with the exception of a couple of other dignitaries and whatever that came in. They had their own security, but the funeral and the family was my responsibility. Radio Doc was there. He was one of my associates to help me out with that. And it was a trying time, I'll tell you, for a lot of reasons. Let me start from the beginning here. Not related to the funeral. When we first got there, we stayed in a little motel in Fredonia, Arizona, which is about, Fredonia sits dead on the state line. It's, I believe the state line is probably the same as the city limit sign right there. If it's not, it's within 100 yards. And then there's Kanab, Utah, where the funeral was. Lavoie was born in Kanab, born and raised. Everybody around there knows Lavoie. Everybody. Matter of fact, we stopped at this little motel I was telling you about. It was the Grand Canyon Motel in Fredonia. And we stayed there. I checked some of the prices of the other ones, and a lot of them were full. I mean, that town was packed. Packed. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people showed up at this thing. And this motel that we stayed in was built in 1895. Teddy Roosevelt stayed at it in 1906. And I think they haven't cleaned the cat box since then. The office was, oh Lord, it smells so bad. I said, you got to be kidding me. But it was very inexpensive. And but actually we got into the rooms, and the rooms were pretty nice. Obviously it's an old, you could tell, I didn't know it was that old, but it when we did some research on it, it was that old. And they were clean, not fancy by any remote stretch of the imagination, but they were worth the money. Had a full-size refrigerator, microwave, oven, stove, whole kitchenette thing. And I believe it cost us, I think regular price on it was $39 for a single and $44 for a double. They gave us a little bit of a discount because there was, you know, several of us, and we were staying more than one day, so they were very, very hospitable. I can't say anything about the service. It was great. I had no problem with them at all. And for the price, I think we did a fine thing there. But anyway, we went in there, and the lady was filling out our paperwork and everything, and she said, you know, she's just making small talk. She wasn't nosy. She was just, you know, just kind of making a conversation while we were doing stuff. And she says, well, you know, where are you from? You know, what you doing around here? And what brings you up here? And told her a funeral. And she said, oh, yeah, which one? And she told her Lavoie. And so she, oh, yeah, yeah. And then she finished filling out the paperwork. And she said, all right, Michael, you want to show these guys the room? They're here for your uncle's funeral. I said, wow. So of all the motels we could have picked, we picked one that his nephew works at there. But anyhow, it's back to more serious stuff. There was first off, let me tell you, there was no closed casket. All of the crap you read on Facebook and on the internet was all crap. It was the whole thing. If nobody knows, you know, how many times, well, there are somebody, but knows how many times he was shot, but the results of the independent autopsy have not been released yet. Of all the people that claim that didn't know in the numbers of times that he was shot, if they do, they don't know. If it happens to be the right number, it's because it was coincidence, because that has not been released. But it was not a closed casket. LaVoy looked good. And the casket, oh my goodness, you should have seen this casket. His sons, and I think one of his son-in-laws, I believe it was, built this casket. And it was amazing. LaVoy always said that he wanted to be. Now, by the way, I'm not telling you anything that's not on different news releases and stuff, and I won't. Let me see. Doc just left. Lost sound. It looks like Doc. Two Docs lost sound. Let me see what's going on here. Sound looks good here. Alright. We've got. Alright, guys. Let me know if the sound's back on or not. Alright. Give me a sign. Just show me this. Let me know by a show of hands who has sound here. All right, looks like we're back. All right, let me back up just a little bit. For those of you that sound went out, the lady said, after she filled out the paperwork, she said, okay, Michael, you want to show these guys their room? They're here for your uncle's funeral. And I thought, wow, of all the motels we could have chosen, we pick one that is LaVoy's nephew works at. So, pretty interesting. Well, anyway, let's get back to the funeral itself. And I just said, I don't know if you missed it or not, but I'm going to say it again, that I'm not going to tell you anything that is not in the news. I'm not betraying any confidence here. Dang, I'm having a hard time talking. LaVoy said he always wanted to be buried in a pine box. Simple funeral with just family and stuff. And the pine box was anything but a pine box. It was pine. But his sons, and a couple of his sons, and I think a son-in-law, if I'm not mistaken, built it. It was awesome. Had horseshoes for handles. Had a big deal on the front of it up there that had the one cowboy stand for freedom burned into it, branded into it. And around the outside of this was what looked to be barbed wire. And I'm going to tell you what, it looked like some kind of perfect stencil or something to be barbed wire. Well, come to find out, I was about to say something about it, and come to find out, it was barbed wire. I mean, they took actual barbed wire from a fence off of his place and heated it up and burned it into the box, branded the box with this barbed wire. And there was a couple of places that they had little pieces of wire on it where it was tied to a fence post. They said, no, just leave it on there. And they heated it up and burned it in there too. I've got some pictures, quite a few pictures that are a little closer than what you see in the news. And I'll put those on there. I can't do it tonight. I've got too much stuff going on to have all four of my hands running at the same time. But it was a neat, neat deal. And so anyway, get on with the numbers at the funeral. The funeral director said, you know, we just did the biggest funeral we've ever had in this county was, I think he said 1,500. He told me the name and all the stuff there. And I said, you might want to think about getting prepared for a new record here. Because I had every confidence that there was going to be a whole lot more than 1,500. And I was not disappointed. Folks, I'm here to tell you that this was not a small church. It was what they call in for you folks that are familiar with LDS churches and stuff. It was what they call a stake center. It's a pretty good size church. It had a pretty good size chapel, and then behind the chapel, it has a full size gym with a full size basketball court. That's carpet type. It's a real low pile carpet. And then there's a stage, full-size stage behind that. So they had seating for 1,000 people in this chapel and what we call the cultural center there, cultural hall. And from the chairs, where the chairs stopped on each side out to the walls, there was probably a 7-foot aisleway on each side. All of the seating was full, folks. I mean, people were rubbing shoulders all the way around. There was no sit down and somebody sat 3 feet away from them because they didn't want to sit by anybody. They filled up every available spot that they could possibly squeeze a butt into. And all the chairs were full. So that's 1,000 right there by itself. The stage was full. The places, the aisles on both sides by the up to the walls, you know, 7 foot on each side there, was standing room only, and it was full. Both sides. There was probably an additional, my best guess was probably 300 or so standing there. So we're up to at least 1,300 right now. Both hallways were pretty full. They had two rooms on the far end, good sized room. One of them was used for the viewing, and pretty good sized rooms. They're probably 35 to 40 feet long and 25 feet wide, maybe something like that. Both of those were full. The foyers coming in on each side of the building were fairly full, not packed, but full. There were people outside of the building that couldn't get in. They didn't have any place to go. So I'm pretty well convinced that there was pretty close to 3,000 people there. Lavoie's wife said that she thinks her official count is somewhere around 2,200. So, and I think that is on the conservative side. But I think it was somewhere between 2,200 and 2,800, 3,000, somewhere there. There was, suffice it to say that there was a bunch of folks there. Lavoie was a loved man. I promise you that. There was horse trailers there, campers, trailers, all manner of vehicles that you could think of. I had, altogether, I believe I had Radio Doc brought one guy with him. We had our buddy the Hunter from Utah brought four or five guys with him. Now, these were all guys that were on my security detail. I had two with me. I think it was right at 12. And I'm going to tell you what, we were busy. Yeah, we'll get to that, Radio Doc. It was, what we're trying to do is keep people from stealing stuff out of the foyers, which, you know, there was memorials set up there in both of the foyers, nice memorials with saddles and pictures and spurs and hats and lariats and bridles and books and chaps and rocking chairs that Lavoie used to sit in and read his scriptures and with the family and stuff. All kinds of stuff. And of course, the family didn't want any of that to walk out. So, yeah, the Patriots did show respect there. We had very minimal problems. We had one that almost turned into a problem. We got that taken care of very quickly and under control. And the rest of it sailed fairly smoothly, but we were running back and forth all the time, making sure that everything did run smoothly, and we were rewarded by good, faithful, respectful patriots there, lots and lots of them. So we got the not all the people got to view Lavoie. And that's probably okay with Lavoie. I mean, he wasn't about all that stuff. But a lot of people. They were lined up down the hallways from way before 11 o'clock. It was supposed to start at 11, the viewing, and go until 2, 3 hours. And I doubt we got halfway through them. The funeral director kept saying, you know, come on, folks, come on, hurry, just, you know, shake hands, say hi, and tell him you're sorry and move on. You know, that we got him. He was very, very respectful and very polite about it, but he was trying to get as many people through there as he could. In the end, it wound up, we got close to the end, and I wound up walking with her down the hall, and she was just reaching out real quickly and saying, hi, thanks for coming, and shaking your hand, and getting as many people as we could, and then moved on into the service. The service was amazing. This is only the second funeral I've ever been to in my whole life. The other one was my dad. And I have now some regrets that about all that. But there were some people got up there and spoke, his brothers and his bishop and all that. And what an interesting service it was, all the things that they had to talk about. The brothers had a lot of stories about Lavoie from when he was when they were boys. One of them that tickled me was they all said, they all agreed that the surest way to get Lavoie to do something was to tell him that he couldn't do it. He said he would not be defeated in any way. The Partisan Gorilla, if you could, I need to contact you. That is something that is that the wife is looking for. She desperately wants that back, if there's any possible way. Desperately. We're trying to thank you, Scoutus. Anyway, I'll get with you on that. One of the things, he was with his brother, and Lavoie rode up there on a horse, and he's looking at this house. A door was open, and he kind of leaned down and looked and said, yeah, I think we can make it. And his brother says, no, what are you doing? Are you doing what I think you're doing? So he rides his horse in the house, went up on a couple of steps there and turned around and rode him back out. Didn't fall through the floor or nothing, which I don't know what the floor was made of. But anyway, a lot of stories like that. Interesting stuff. It was very, very amusing and educational talks that some of them give. And then the whole family got up there, and they sang a song, and each one of them had, not the whole family, his family, his immediate family. And each one of them had a little something to say, you know. About, and it was so touching. I mean, when you hear that, saying there wasn't a dry eye in the house, folks, there was not a dry eye in the house. There was 3,000 people bawling their heads off out there. It was very, very touching. Anyway, then after that was done, we got that over with, and then the service got over with, and we took him outside and put him in the hearse, and I was driving his wife's car, and we were right behind the hearse, and I've got a lot of video of that. And there were lots of horses out there, and I counted them in the video as they went by. There was 50 horses. His dad was leading the riderless horse, the empty saddle, in the front. The hearse was following that. We were following the hearse. And there was cars lined up and people on the side of the streets, folks. I'm telling you, for probably well over a mile, probably close to a mile and a half. I have no earthly idea how many people there was outside there. I know all the people in the church didn't rush outside and go stand beside the street. I know some of them did. But there was so many people out there, and so many signs, and people waving and throwing flowers. Speaking of flowers, the funeral director said that they took 10 van loads of flowers to this funeral. The lady at the flower place there in Kanab unplugged her phone because she ran out of flowers. She could not help anybody. She had nothing left to offer. If this funeral didn't set some records in Kanab, I'm not even going to say that. I know it did. I know it did set records in Kanab. And Kanab's not a real big town. It's a nice town. It's not real big. I'm not sure what the population is, but it's been there, you know, forever. It was settled there originally by Mormon settlers back in, I'm going to guess, somewhere in the vicinity of 1835, 1865, somewhere in that area. And anyway, we got all done with that and went back. There was quite a veil of secrecy over, for security reasons, over moving him from, I won't go into the details of it, but it all involved unmarked vehicles and whatnot to get Lavoie to his final resting place. And so we were done for the day, and then we had some meetings and some other stuff going on. So I'm going to close the first half of the hour out here. This takes a few minutes, but you need to listen to this. It's 9 minutes long. This is a press release, press conference, that two of his daughters did. His daughters are so strong. The whole family is. They're amazing people. But I don't want you to listen to this press release. I mean, press conference, dang it. And we'll be back after this.
We thank you all for coming from far and wide this day as we mourn the loss of our father, Robert Lavoie Finicum. Through this tragedy, we find hope and peace as we build stronger as a family unit in forgiveness, love, and loyalty. Our family is united to press forward with our father's message that he fervently taught us that only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. These past few weeks, our father has been called many names by the world, but I'll tell you what we call him. We call him Daddy. And we are grateful that our faith teaches us that families are forever. Our daddy taught us time-tested principles. He taught us to be honest, kind, and to always have hope. He taught us to be examples. He taught us by his example to have self-discipline and daily diligence in how to conduct our lives as good citizens. As his children, we have learned so much about faith, respect, and love. We were not done learning from his wisdom, and we will miss hearing those inspiring words from his mouth. Our dad was an honest man and believed passionately in the rule of law. He was an inspiring teacher. Many believe that while on the refuge in Oregon, he spent his time covered up by a blue tarp defending that outpost at gunpoint. That is a false narrative. I was there. True to form, Tarp Man spent his days in Oregon meeting with people, befriending them, helping them, teaching them the principles that our leaders have abandoned. Many are grateful that he came because he gave them hope. they saw him differently from how the media characterized him.
Right.
And some have even joined us today. For many years, Western state ranchers have respected our father for his leadership in defending their long struggle to keep their way of life sacred. To stand against government overreach and defend their rights, he boldly took the stance that it was the federal government, not the ranchers, that had violated the law as found in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. In the tradition of Patrick Henry, liberty was worth more than life. Our father's teachings are preserved on our website, onecowboystandforfreedom.com. We urge everyone to learn more about what our dad believes. Throughout history, there have been few courageous people willing to stand for what they know is right. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, people like Cicero, Joan of Arc, Sir Thomas More. The founders of this American Republic, they all had one thing in common. They were mocked, ridiculed, and called extremists. Today's defenders of the U.S. Constitution are now called domestic terrorists. But isn't it interesting to note that yesterday's extremists typically become tomorrow's heroes? Robert Lavoie Finicum, my dad, was and is our hero.
Our father read and studied that founding document. He sincerely believed that he was following the rule of law, and that it was the federal government that was violating it. And we agree with him. We also agree with Thomas Jefferson, who once said, "When governments fear the people, there's liberty. When the people fear the government, there's tyranny." But few remember the rest of that famous quote. "The strongest reason for the people to retain the right to keep and bear arms is, as at last resort, to protect themselves against the tyranny of government."
Yes.
Whether or not you believe that our father did the right thing, we step forward to publicly ask, who are we as Americans? Who are we as human beings? Do we now believe that mere words justify the use of deadly force? Do we believe that peaceful actions justify the use of deadly force? Do we believe that two hands up in surrender justifies the use of deadly force? And do we believe that following the rule of law, the U.S. Constitution, justifies the use of deadly force? If we do, then where is liberty?
Where is it?
Today, many questions are being asked, and many questions are left unanswered about our father's wrongful death. We don't want the media's bias. We don't want the FBI's bias. We want the truth. And so today, we celebrate our father's life. But going forward,
calling. For a private, independent investigation.
Yes.
To find out exactly what happened to our dad in an ambush at a lonely, desolate stretch of highway in the dead of winter in eastern Oregon.
Murder.
We as a family want to thank you. We thank you for coming. We thank so many people who have come far and wide, and for the support worldwide. The love that you're pouring out to our family. The support you are giving us. We're thankful for you coming and hearing. And we urge you to study. Study out in your heart and your mind. Where is truth? What is it? And what is liberty? Again, we thank you, and that's all we have to say.
Thank you.
That's as tough listening to now as it was standing there listening to. I was standing, you know, 4 feet away from them while they were doing that, and it was tough to listen to. But right quick, I'm going to put a website in the chat room for you. For those of you that have always loved Voodoo Donuts up in Portland, I have reason for you to consider not loving him so much anymore. When Ammon Bundy was transferred to Portland, they made a special donut with a picture of what was supposed to be Ammon Bundy, a cowboy behind bars, and said, "Welcome to Portland." And we can't do a whole lot besides not buy their donuts, which can't say I bought a whole lot anyway, being in Portland. But if I ever go back, I can assure you that I'd have no intention of buying one. But I do have a website here where you can go and contact them and let them know your displeasure. Be respectful and polite, but be firm and let them know what you think, if you're so inclined. I'll put that in the chat room right now, and you guys can take it from there. Now, there's a deal here. I want to do this real quick, and give me a couple minutes, and I'll be back. And on the eighth day, God made the farmer, but he was not done. He looked down on the wilds of his untamed earth and said, "I need someone who will never be broken." And so his greatest work began. First he filled their belly full of guts and their hearts full of try. Then he called them a cowboy. He needed someone who could handle a horse, teach them, tame them, but never break them. Someone whose soul needed the saddle and would not change with the world around them. So God made a cowboy. He needed someone who could find a hot bull in a 100-section pasture, ride a bronc, hold a family together, read a brand, let wrongdoings go, and pull a tight cinch. God needed someone who didn't mind dusty cow pens, smoking branding irons, long days and cold nights. So God made a cowboy. It had to be someone who could make a living with their rope, cow dog, and a few good horses. Someone who would never know a 40-hour week nor care to. He needed to create a proud man, one who would take a stand and whose greatest compliment would be to have his kids called handy. So God made a cowboy. But after he created the cowboy, he was far from done. While his creation was tough and untamed, they need more than just a good horse to share their name, and no ordinary woman would understand the cowboy. God needed to create a woman who didn't want store-bought roses by the dozen, but rather wild flowers, seldom picked and sweet cowboy loving. He needed someone who could take a good custom in the working pens, love unconditionally, and forgive. Someone who could open her own doors, sweep tack room floors, look past muddy boots into kitchen floors, make a home, hold her own, and have an eye for a good horse. Someone who didn't need lavish and flattery, but would find joy in a spring-born colt. Someone who could raise babies, fix fence, patch jeans, and never waver in the hard times of cowboy life. So God made a cowboy's wife. And when God fashioned the cowboy and his wife, he made them in his exact image and likeness, and bless them for all their earthly life. That was, I wish I could take credit for that. I did read it. I couldn't find a sound of that anywhere, an audio recording. But it was done by apparently a gal named Kaylin Waters. And I took it and tuned it up a little bit for the radio show and read it. I want to make sure that Kaylin Waters gets credit for that. But that perfectly describes LaVoy Finicum and his wife. It was they had to have modeled that around them. But anyway, on to the when the all the procedures got taken care of the next day, we went out to the burial, and there's the after it was done, you know, they know, you know, where he's at now, but they didn't want everybody to know. They didn't want the media following him out there and everything. So there was quite a show getting his body out there. And this was on a family plot out there on on a family plot. And it was the grave was hand dug, and it was done just. The way that that sand stands up out there was perfectly straight, sheer walls, perfectly square. And they had, for those of you that are, I hope there's none of my listeners that are stupid enough to believe the things that you see on Facebook and whatnot about the FEMA coffins, please. For people that put that up there, please grow up and do a little research. Those are called grave liners, coffin liners, I think, grave liners. Yes, there are yards full of them. Yes, you will encounter flatbed trucks loaded with them going down the highway. You know why? Because lots of people die. And that's what they put those in. That's what that beautiful pine box was put in. The box was finished, and it was so, so pretty. And I was thinking, going out there, I said, surely, I thought once we got there, no, that they're not just going to stick that in the ground like that, not a wooden box. No, they've got a, they had a, the coffin was sitting on a, on the bottom of the box of the grave liner, and then the top goes down over it, and it's sealed with what we used to call ram neck, which was a black stuff, black tar type stuff that you put around cement manholes and things like that to keep them from leaking. So anyway, beautiful service. It was the family, the immediate family sang Amazing Grace. Boy, that was tough to get through. Wow. Luckily, I was turned the other way watching for threats. Then they had the whole, all the family. There was probably, 75 people there. Nah, there wasn't that many. 50 probably, something like that. We had 1, 2, 3, 4. We had five security guards on them. And yes, String Bean, it was handmade. It was made by his sons and his, I think, a son-in-law. But I tell you, the most amazing part of this deal, after they got him in, the service was over. Most of the people kind of drifted off talking. There was flowers. There was a mountain of flowers out there. And they gave away flowers, to everybody. And they donated a bunch to a couple of organizations there that could use them. And when this was over, and I was blown away by this. Those girls that did that press conference and their sisters, all of his girls. I told you the grave was dug by hand. Well, it was also backfilled by hand. The girls did the overwhelming majority of it, well over half of it. Those girls, how tough do you need to be, especially as a woman, to cover your dad up? Those girls are, they're a better man than most men that I know. They're amazing. But we got all that done, and then we went down to the house, and they fed us and everything, which it was great. We had, I don't remember, two or three different kinds of ham and scalloped potatoes and fruit and salad and all kinds of stuff. And while we were down there, there was a, and this was equally as much of a tearjerker for me, being LDS to start with. There was a girl there that was Romanian, and she was under 30 years old, and she was adopted by one of the other families related to the Finicums there, and she had. She had went on a mission to, I believe she said Chile or Argentina or somewhere. And when she got there, she found out, she knew before she left, but she was going to the same area that her foster mother had been in. She was a foster child and then was adopted by somebody locally there. She went to the same area. And some of the people that her foster mother, had taught and converted at the time were now different presidents and bishops and whatnot in the church there. Can you imagine what a feeling that, regardless of what your faith is, put that aside, how would it be to go to a place like that, you know, several thousand miles away, and go to the same area where your foster mother. Now the thing is, this was quite a deal, because obviously the foster mother, no blood relation, and did this many years prior to this girl going down there. So I thought that was an amazing thing. It was pretty cool. So anyway, we're going to start thinking about winding it down here. Before I do, we've still got a little bit here, but I want to play. This is Lavoy Finicum's Daughters. Now, turn it up, pay attention.
Are you going to agree? Our freedoms are waning and we'll lose our liberty, slipping one by one until there's nothing left to see. Are you willing to stand with me? Are you just going to let it be? The ranchers are first, but brother, next it may be me. We all stand together or we'll hang separately. Are you going to the tree? Are you willing to be free? It won't get any easier to regain lost liberty. Strange things are happening in this land that once was free. So brother, I ask you, are you going to stand by me?
Those girls are something else. The whole family is something else. It was I forgot to mention too. And Radio Doc put it in there. Clive and Bundy, no surprise, he was there, and his wife and his, I think a couple of other, his family and his security was there. But these people, all of them. don't know any strangers. They treat everybody like family. They're very forgiving, very tolerant. They are the salt of the earth. They're as good a people as you could meet. And they made us certainly feel like family, and it was a great time. Other than the circumstances it was under, but other than that, it was great to be around these people. It was great to be introduced to them. Huge family. And I was just absolutely honored, as I think all of them were, all of our security guys and everybody that was involved. We were completely honored to be a part of it. It wasn't just another mission or another job. It was it was quite the deal. So anyway, there you have it. I've got a whole bunch of stories. Got a bunch of other stories to share here. We'll have to do that some other time, because I'm going to be sorry about that. I'm going to be too short on time to do any more stories here, but I'll get on them tomorrow. I will get this downloaded. I'll get it on podcast tonight for those of you that are not able to catch it live. I'll have it on podcast, and I'll put it on Facebook as soon as we get done here. And we've got, and obviously you know that I have to, yeah, string bean, buddy, you better believe it. Very powerful day, 2 days for some of us. It was spiritual, it was inspirational, it was patriotic, it was everything that is right about America, everything that is true and honest and virtuous about this country could be found in Kanab, Utah this last weekend. So you know, now frankly, I am not nearly as forgiving as LaVoy and his family. And you know what I have to end this show with, right? We will see you tomorrow night. Don't go anywhere. Listen. I know you've heard it before. Some of you, maybe some new folks out there haven't heard it. This is, I put this together quite some time ago, but obviously it was made for this time. Good night. My name is John Q. Public, and I am a member in good standing of an organization called America, and I have a message for those agencies and agents that work under the auspices of the Department of Justice. You have called me many things in the past, rebel, right-wing extremist, domestic terrorist, to name a few, but that is not important. What I'm about to tell you is... There must be accountability in all things, sooner or later. When you sin, however big or small, you will be held accountable either in this life or the next. When you invade people's privacy, violate their rights, steal property, break up families, and hurt people, the time is fast approaching that you will be held accountable both in this life and the next. You and I took the same oath, administered by the same people. We both swore to protect the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Some of you actually feel that you honor that oath, but you violate it each time you force a young girl to her bedroom floor in nothing but her underwear and hold her there at gunpoint. Or when you shoot or stomp a family pet to death, or shoot a young boy down in cold blood in the mountains of Idaho, or incinerate over 70 innocent people in a church in Texas. Warriors, indeed. How dare you call me a domestic terrorist? I go to work every day, sometimes at two jobs to make ends meet. I attend church every Sunday that I'm not working. As difficult as it is, I try to make time each day for my kids. I teach them about the Constitution and the Golden Rule. I have extra food and supplies to help myself and others through hard times. I try as hard as I can to obey the ever-increasing number of laws that are forced upon us, and I pay my fair share of taxes. I have a gun to protect myself and my family against those who would do us harm. I shouldn't have to use it to protect us against you. In fact, your organization is not even authorized by the Constitution and shouldn't be here, but since you are here, let's talk about your job description and performance. We have common enemies, you and I, that we should be united in fighting. The Founding Fathers never intended for us to fight each other. We should be as one. The current us-against-them attitude should never have been allowed to rear its ugly head. Division is unhealthy for the country. You will undoubtedly conduct more unconstitutional invasions of homes and businesses, and more innocent people will be injured or killed. A dairy in Pennsylvania, a rabbit grower in Kansas, a gun shop in New Mexico. It may even be me and my family. But let me make one thing abundantly clear. We, the people, have grown weary of living in fear. We're tired of being treated like animals. If you continue to follow the path that you are on, the time may come when you will not find us waiting to be descended upon when we least expect it. We may come to you. We outnumber you 1,000 to 1, and the same people that trained you trained many of us. We, the people, are becoming aware of those numbers. One day, you will launch one of your cowardly sneak attacks on an unsuspecting young family in Idaho, and instead of your brave sniper finding a defenseless, unarmed woman holding a baby in her arms, he may find that the tables have been turned. One day, instead of terrorizing and destroying another American family in retribution for a trivial infraction of an unconstitutional law, instead of shooting down defenseless children or young veterans that are trying only to live the American dream, you may find patriots waiting for you that have been pushed to their limit. One day, you will find that you have awakened a sleeping giant, and we the people will indeed hold you accountable for your evil deeds. Hundreds of men, women, and children have died at your hand because of poor information, no information, or just plain overzealous, out-of-control power freaks on an adrenaline high that have no regard for human life. Agents that think their badge is a license to kill with impunity. The difference between you and us is that we will not harm your family as long as they stay out of the fight. I don't want your family to go through what you have put many of ours through. Yes, they will be sad if you don't come home, but when the grieving is over, they will come to understand that you simply chose the wrong side. You see, this is nothing more than a conflict between good and evil. It's that simple, but this is not how it is supposed to be. This is not the America that the Founding Fathers entrusted us with. I implore each of you, before you go to work tomorrow, to take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror and see if you truly like what you see. If you can look at yourself and be proud of what you've done, or what you may be called upon to do, or more importantly, if you feel that you can walk uprightly before God and look Him in the eye and feel justified in what you have done, then we have nothing further to discuss. But some of you are not really jackbooted thugs. Some of you are simply misguided and feel that you really are doing the right thing. To you, I say, please, follow your conscience, do what you know in your heart is right, for we the people will hold you accountable.